Hey, I'm Dan, here to talk to you about password strength estimation. This is some research I did at Dropbox. I'm not an academic. This may become painfully clear throughout the course of this talk. But this is my first time here at USENIX, and I'm really excited to be here. And part of getting ready was going to USENIX.org, creating an account, signing some consent forms, et cetera. And I was routinely going about that when it kind of suddenly hit me all at once, you know, wait a second. Here I am at the Advanced Computing Systems Association. This is the group that puts on one of the world's foremost security conferences. I can't wait to create an account. You know, I wonder what that's like. And I was just so excited. And needless to say, I was shocked. I got to the point where you enter in a password. I thought I'd poke around, typed in password. And the strength meter is more than half full. You know, fair kind of means okay, leaning towards good. But this is not just a bad choice, this is rock bottom. This is maybe the worst possible choice you could make. Set your password to a semicolon, or most first letters of the alphabet. At least there's like 26 possibilities, okay? But train any guessing model on most password leaks, and this will be the very first guess you make. And it just gets worse from here. So some guessing attacks are dictionary-based, but they'll apply transformation rules as they work down the list. So Hashcat, for example, will guess this in two guesses. So this is not good, USENIX. Now, at this point, I'm really upset. But to turn this around, you know, if I try five random lowercase letters, okay, well, at least there's like 12 million possibilities. Certainly that's gonna, oh my god. So maybe you're not surprised, or perhaps you're desensitized to this problem because this madness is all around us. So here over at Twitter, if you really squint, the strength meter is about 11/12 of the way full, but of course my choice was just heinously irresponsible. So this problem is everywhere, but if there's one good thing I can say about bad password feedback, it's that at least you can ignore it. And this is leading to the much more vicious incarnation of this problem, which of course is password requirements. And now users really have no choice but to suffer. And I'm not picking on Verizon, this is a problem everywhere, but I will say, this is just slightly more baroque than average. It's amazing to me that you can have a red list of eight bulleted red X's, where one of them is no spaces allowed. I mean, that can only help guessing attacks. Why is that helpful? Mm-hmm. So this problem is all around us. And just to really crystallize this, the problem here is that guessing attacks have been steadily evolving year by year for 3.5 decades. And at this very session, after mine, we'll have a new attack with neural networks pushing the state of the art forward. So algorithmic sophistication has really come a long ways, but also the data these attacks have to work with is really quite immense. Hundreds of millions of real hacked passwords, internet-sized studies of language. And on the other hand, you know, if you study the history, password policy, the type that's in vogue now, kind of started popping up in the late 70s, early 80s, and really hasn't changed. So this was a really long time ago, back when health experts thought margarine was a great idea. You know, threat models tended to involve time-shared Unix mainframes before personal computers, before the internet. So this is a big discontinuity and security and usability problem at the same time. But it just gets worse. So not only is everyone using horrible, ineffective rules, but nobody can agree. So this is an inconsistently arbitrary situation. And in this Bonneau and Priebisch study from 2010, the 150 high-traffic sites they looked at, even this 142 distinct policies should be considered charitable. Out of the 8 sites that agreed with at least one other policy out of 150, and kind of a low bar, I believe 3 of them were newspapers that were owned by the same parent company. So you just can't make this stuff up. And Wong and Wong, 5 years later, found the same problem. And it's the same problem with inconsistent feedback, because this is just a different incarnation of the same problem. So this is an anecdotal example. I went to a bunch of sites and typed in correct horse battery stable, and got quite a variety of reactions. So this is anecdotal, but if you like this subject and dystopic nonfiction in general, check out this paper. It's much worse than you might imagine. So what I'm proposing today is a password strength estimator, and I'm certainly not the first person to complain about this problem or to propose a solution. So what I would say is special about this proposal is it is so easy to adopt, it's perhaps even easier than writing these arbitrary ad hoc rules. Certainly no harder. And that's because it's small, it runs entirely on the client, there's no infrastructure to adopt, no new data structures or protocol changes, or you know, passwords going over the wire, no new surface area to lock down. It's just really, really easy to adopt. So with an estimator like that in hand, what might password creation UI then look like? Well, these are two examples that I like, and you know, I'm kind of biased with the first one, but at Dropbox, we don't have password requirements other than a 6-character minimum. We just give feedback, and it's a very non-invasive sort of UI. To be clear, Uber does not use ZXCVPN, to my knowledge. I included them here because I really like this requirement UI, and I think it would pair well with client-side estimation. So if the password's not cutting it, let's say it's guessable in under 100 guesses or under 500 guesses, according to the estimator, let's say, just say so and let them fix it absolutely any way they like. I really like this style of UI and hope to see more of it. So that's a quick introduction and covers the what and why. I'm going to move on to how the estimator works, and we'll end the talk with some experiments to see if it actually accurately estimates real guessing attacks. So it's always good to keep a threat model in mind before we jump into the details. So a strong password only protects against guessing attacks, not against malware, keyloggers, phishing, et cetera. And I'm really focused on online guessing attacks in this talk. So that's where an attacker goes to public interfaces just the same way you would log in and makes guesses that way, subject to rate limiting, all of that. And I'm going to use a million guesses as an upper bound for an online attack. And that might seem really high. So some adopters will have great rate limiting and can stop an attack in, let's say, 100 or even less guesses. But we're going with a million for a few reasons. And I'm taking this from an administrator's guide to internet password research. What they do to come up with this rough number is, for one, they look at a real password distribution. I believe they look at RockYou. And notice that an attacker making guesses in optimal order will see their success rate, their likelihood of success, drop by about 5 orders of magnitude by the time they hit a million. So over a latent internet connection, an online attack really starts to become infeasible around here. And then the other piece is, even with no rate limiting whatsoever, it starts to get very difficult on the admin side not to notice a million password guesses coming in. So offline is still important, but there's many great ways to mitigate offline guessing attacks today that don't impact usability. So key stretching techniques like Argon2 or breach detection, emergency password reset capability. So I'm really focused on online guessing here. I will say there are some cases where you'd want offline protection sort of in a way that affects your policy. So password derived keys are a good example. But here I'm really focused on web and mobile password flows. Okay, so with that threat model in mind, here's the core idea for the estimator. It's really simple. I'll explain it to you with an example. Let's say I'm signing up at Dropbox. I type in my first and last name. And then for my password, I type in my last name again. Sounds great. So the way this works is we take a few top lists. We could have top passwords, top surnames. And this is an optional feature. We could also pass in lists that are derived on the fly. So this call-specific list, in this case, has Dropbox keywords, because I'm signing up at Dropbox, and it has the fields that I entered in. And all we do is see if the password I typed is in any of these lists. And if it's in multiple lists, we take the minimum rank. So we're done. The answer here is 2 guesses. So I hesitate to call this statistical. I think it's kind of a big word for this idea. You could call this machine learning. I think that's kind of a stretch. But the advantage of something this simple is a training interface is really, really simple, easy to explain conceptually. And you know, there's no ML toolkit to install, no process that needs to run on a cluster. These lists are really easy to make, and the model can be retrained live. So if you want to load in lists separately and train the model that way, or maybe change the lists based on the user's locale, et cetera, that's all very doable here. So that's another, from an adopter's perspective, this is really simple. But how well does this estimate real attacks? We'll get to that at the end of the attack. For now, we can catch some more patterns without dramatically affecting the runtime or the space requirements of the estimator. So we can catch word transformations. And the way these affect the estimate, so reversed words, for example, will double the estimate. So if the password is matched as a reversed word, and that word is at, let's say, rank X, we'll estimate 2x, because now an attacker would need to try all the words in that list, and also their reversed variants. That's sort of the reasoning behind that estimate. And we do similar estimates for leap, substitutions, capitalizations. And we can catch other types of patterns. So here with this input, we can try lining this up on a QWERTY keyboard and see if there's a pattern there. And if there is, we can count the length, how many turns. And from here, we can come up with an estimate. How many other patterns are there like this, with this length or less, with this number of turns or fewer? We'll come up with an estimate. And so on for other types of patterns. So if you're like me and you don't speak Russian, this password may look impressive, but it's actually an alphabetic password. And the way the estimator catches this is by looking at Unicode code point order and for a fixed code point delta between characters. So here we can ask, how many sequences have this length or less with this code point delta or less, and come up with an estimate. So what's nice about this is we don't need hard-coded sequences. This trick generally works pretty well. It doesn't, code point order doesn't always perfectly match to human recognizable sequences. So this only imperfectly matches Japanese kana sequences, for example. But for Roman alphabet, for numbers, for Greek and Cyrillic, there's a lot of patterns that this catches without any lists. Okay, so those are examples. This is the full set of patterns the estimator catches. So it also catches date patterns with a variety of kind of international formats, repeats. And the way this all ties together, the last piece I have to explain is, okay, let's say password is in the list. How do you match password 7? How in general do you do multi-pattern sequence matching? And I'll explain that through an example. So the full algorithm now is a three-phase process. Given an input, start by finding all the pattern matches possible over all substrings, and they'll probably overlap. And then we'll estimate a strength for each as if they stand on their own independently. And this last step is a search, where we now try to find the non-overlapping subsequence that covers the password and minimizes some guess figure. And I'm skipping exactly how the search works, but it looks for a sequence that minimizes the product of guesses, but we also work in a penalty for length. So if there's two sequences that have a similar product, but one is shorter, there's fewer patterns covering the password, it'll bias towards that. And those details are in the paper. I'm skipping through that piece. So in the end, the answer is going to be around the product of the guesses matched. OK, so this all sounds very interesting and fanciful. Does it work? Let's turn to that next. So for these accuracy experiments, we're going to, as our gold standard, take real attacks trained on real leaks. And the estimators we're going to look at are ZXVBN, also the estimator inside KeePass Password Safe. This is an open source password manager. And I include them here because they're the only other estimator studied by that Carnevale and Manon paper that wasn't just a pretty simplistic count of character class type rules. And then lastly, NIST entropy. If you haven't heard of NIST entropy, I'm skipping the review here, but all you need to know about it is the US government recommends it, admittedly with some disclaimers. Compliances and standards are based on it, and as we'll see, it doesn't work very well, confirming a bunch of other research. Okay, so for our gold standard for password guessability, we're using the password guessability service from CMU's password research group. They very generously run four models in parallel. The configuration I'm using here will take the minimum over four models as the strength. So for a given password, whichever of these four models guesses it first, we're going to call that the gold standard for its strength. And we're using two leading theoretical models, but we're also including two like very well productized dictionary-based guessing models that are in practice heavily in use as well. And one thing I like about this methodology is it's very easy for me, and again, it's very generous for CMU to open this up. But what I also like is there's little that I can do to bias the gold standard or sort of mess with it. They're the experts on this. So they run the models and they also pick the training data. So I'm using the training data they found most effective. The training data, or top lists, I'm giving to the estimators is similar to the PGS training data, but you'll notice some differences. So both sets use RockYou and Yahoo, and that's reflecting that attackers and estimators have access generally to the same password lists. We can all use BitTorrent to try to find those. Instead of the MySpace leak, which is older and a small password leak, I'm instead using Mark Burnett's 2015 password corpus. It's much larger. And instead of the Google Web Corpus, I'm using top 1 grams from Wikipedia. The idea there is Google Web Corpus has some licensing issues. This is an open source project. So there's some differences. To what extent these differences help or hurt the estimators, all the estimators get the same training data. And then for test data, we take a 15,000 password random sample from RockYou. In the paper, you'll see a parallel analysis with Yahoo as well. And again, this is something the Password Research Group did for me because they're handling training all the models. They also were kind to take a random sample and send it over. Okay, so this test data is not seen by PGS or by any of the estimators. So let's look at some graphs. All the graphs I'm going to show look like this. And on the x-axis, we have the PGS, the gold standard. So this is how many guesses were needed in reality by real attacks. And this ranges from, these are log-log plots. So we have one guess on the far left going up to 10 to the 15 guesses on the right. On the y-axis, we have the estimator. So this middle diagonal, you know, y equals x, indicates agreement between the estimator and the gold standard. So this vertical line is just to indicate where the sort of online attack threat ends. So anything to the left of here was guessed by PGS within an online range. And this means points here, points above the solid diagonal, or security problem. This indicates overestimation, meaning the password was said to be stronger than it in fact really was. So this is a security problem, whereas points below this diagonal are going to be usability problems. Now the estimator is saying the password's weaker than it really is and needlessly burdening people. But overestimation is really what we'll worry the most about. That's a security problem. Okay. So here's NIST. And if you're one, you know, NIST entropy outputs an answer in bits. The way that I convert that to guesses is slightly involved, but it's roughly 2 to the bits. And the results look like this. First thing you'll notice are these horizontal bands, and this is a bad place to be for estimators. Because what this means is a NIST entropy estimate of not quite 10 to the 5 guesses, in reality, stretches anywhere from a few guesses, you know, close to 10 to the 0, ranging up to 10 to the 8. So what NIST entropy calls a single estimate can really range in reality. The other thing you'll notice is within the online range, almost all of these points are above the middle diagonal. And there's not a lot we can do to scale that given this horizontal pattern. So this is more confirming evidence that NIST entropy doesn't work very well, but that's a conclusion many others have found as well. So here's KeePass, and the first thing you'll notice is many more of these points within the online range are inside this dotted region. So this indicates less than 2 orders of magnitude of estimation error. So this is certainly better than NIST entropy, but we still have this horizontal banding problem, which you can pretty clearly see. So up at about 10 to the 4.5, the estimate can really, again, stretch in reality quite a bit. So here's the XEVBN, and now we have this nice linear behavior roughly up until about 10 to the 5. And when it does misestimate, it tends to be below the line. So that's a nice feature here. There's very, very little, up until about 10 to the 5, overestimation. This is what we want. Okay, so for a second experiment, what if we now truncate the training size? So we started with all these parallel lists, cut off at 100K tokens. What if we cut it off at 10K instead, or 1K? And here's roughly what the estimator size becomes. So here's that original graph, again, cut off at 100K. If we now cut off at 10K, you see a pretty clear trend. We get this linear growth that ends at about 10 to the 4 now instead of 10 to the 5. Here's that original. Here's cutting off at 10K. And let's now cut off at 1K. Again, linear up until about 10 to the 3. So when these frequency lists run out, we get this big spike in overestimation. And that spike, you'll notice this column of overestimation, it ends around 10 to the 7. And the reason that happens, from what I can tell, is our PGS is trained on about 20 million unique tokens, roughly 10 to the 7. So it's running through that full list and sometimes succeeding. And when the estimators don't have those tokens, you can get really big overestimations. The other takeaway from these graphs is if an adopter only needs accuracy up to 10 to the 3 or 10 to the 4, they can really truncate their estimator, and it'll still work for their needs. Okay, and lastly, I said you could get a lot of mileage out of this really simple idea of taking minimum ranks over parallel lists. So let me just show you what that looks like. So again, here's that original graph matching all the patterns, and now here's if we just do this minimum rank trick. So you can see there's clearly more noise in the online range to the left of this vertical line, but not a lot. We still have pretty nice linear behavior. So here's with all the patterns. Here's just matching words and taking minimums. So the reason we keep all these pattern types is they add very little to the runtime or the space requirements. So I just see these as a net win for this kind of model. I'm going to skip through this pretty quickly, but in the runtime benchmark I did, I took both test sets. I talked about RockYou here. We also have a 15K sample from Yahoo. Concatenated them together and ran through in a few different ways how long the estimator took for passwords in that sample. And even at the 99.9th percentile, it runs in about 3 milliseconds. The slowest password was like a 50-character RockYou URL that someone entered in as their password, probably accidentally. And that took just under 30 milliseconds. So still plenty fast. So just to wrap up, just say no to inconsistently arbitrary password strength estimation. There's now a better way that's arguably even easier to adopt. For estimating online attacks, you know, as sophisticated as these guessing attacks are, at low magnitudes within an online range, it's hard to beat taking a minimum over parallel top lists. So a lot of the sophistication kicks in at higher magnitudes. But matching other pattern types is helpful and cheap. And depending on the accuracy you need, you can really truncate the estimator. So give it a try. It's open source, permissively licensed, cross-platform, but it's also been widely ported. And we have a nice growing adopter base. Thanks.
Plenty of time for questions, please.
Hi, thanks for the talk. I really liked it. In your sample UI near the beginning, you had a little, oh yeah, go to it.
Sample UI?
Yeah, sample UI.
Yep. Almost there. Here we are.
Yeah, great. So you had the little three bar thing
yep.
on the right there.
Yep.
But your, like the sample code you gave basically output a 1-bit value.
Yes.
So
yes.
What are you using to generate that?
Yes. So the example I gave here was for a requirement. So this is maybe the simplest kind of password requirement you could do, something I like. For feedback, you need to output like a value from 0 to 5. So
you would call guesses, and if guesses, it take log of guesses or something.
Yeah, you're going to want to set some kind of window for each score. Okay. So I think forget exactly how we do this by default. We output a score for convenience in the library. But you know, 0 bars means like 1 to 20 guesses, let's say. 1 bar could be under 50 or under 100. 2 bars could be under 1,000 guesses, something like that.
Right. And you don't think users would, like this sample hint, which is, please try something more complex. Are users not going to say, what do I do?
Yeah, I think that depends on how low you set the requirement. You know, if you set it to must be guessable in over 100 guesses or even 500, I think it's only users that like enter their own last name. I think if you set the requirement higher, it could be very confusing, and people might need more feedback.
Right.
And these are just examples of how you could use the estimate. But the estimator also gives quite a bit of meta information about the matches it finds that could be used to give more complex feedback.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah. So I could give an example of that. So.
Yeah.
So here's what the estimator actually does. So I typed in ASDF, SDF, and you can see we match the A as a brute force match, then we find this SDF, SDF as a repeat. So it outputs the match sequence it finds with kind of some numbers. And the score it's giving, these are just kind of ballpark guessing times based on different scenarios, but adopters could use this information any way they like.
Right. Okay, that's great. Thanks.
Thanks.
Hi, interesting idea. Do you have any sense for how accurate your threat model is of what adversaries are using as a guessing pattern? I mean, you're assuming that they're following a particular pattern, and that's why the guesses, the strength goes up as you do various different things. But do we actually have any ground truth that tells us that that, in fact, is how they do it? So if everyone adopted your system, might they adapt their guessing methodology?
Sure. Yeah, so for ground truth, we use the best known guessing attacks, which you know have no ties to the library. So I don't know of better ways to iterate through password choices. But still, if everybody adopted this estimator, might that change the behavior of, say, like online guessing attacks? Well, for one thing, if they can figure out that cutoff for required passwords, they might filter out guesses that the estimator says take fewer than that cutoff. But would that give them very much help? Let's say we cut off guesses at 100, they're able to make 1,000 or 10,000 guesses. Well, they've only saved like 100 out of there. That's not very many.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Rich Johnson, NCAR. I noted you were using OCL Hashcat guessing, but you're talking about online attacks, where it is an offline attack tool. With that in mind, in a modern enterprise that has to live in the real world, we have password commonality between cloud services, where we synchronize a password out, and our enterprise authentication mechanisms that still use passwords instead of tokens. So we're also concerned with offline attacks where someone has passed a hash off to OCL Hashcat. How would you extend this to handle that kind of situation where 10 to the 6th is no longer a limit? Mm-hmm. As Cormac Hurley put it at passwords 15, there's the chasm of don't care. Mm-hmm. Between 10 to the 6th, and I forget what the limit was. But
yeah,
above that,
yeah.
We've got users with passwords that are supposed to be strong against the cracking as well, and it has to be the same password for usability reasons.
Right.
Have you thought about extending this to offline attacks?
Thanks, that's a good question. So I really focused on online attacks here. I think to look at offline attacks, to use this estimator, I think the best thing you could do is grow the data that's provided to it. But then I didn't look at what happens at higher magnitudes when you do that. And what's tricky is that online-offline chasm you mentioned, where after the online cutoff ends, before offline attacks start getting difficult, a password strength anywhere in between there really does no benefit at all. And that's why it's a really questionable sort of usability security trade-off. I think offline attacks depend so much on the hashing algorithm used. Like anything to bring the guessing window down, so using a hard hash function, I really think that's going to be a better route than trying to make this estimator extend over higher magnitudes. With that said, this next talk generalizes really well to high magnitudes, and you're gonna see some of that.
That's a pretty good segue. You have 30 seconds.
Sure. Love the system. Glad to see you finally publish a paper on it. Was playing with it about 3 years ago. I found that as a user, I could adapt simply by not finishing words, password, et cetera, and that if I were a user, that's how I would adapt. Have you done anything to prevent that?
Thanks. Yeah, so edit distance in general is one pattern type that the estimator doesn't catch, and I haven't figured out a way to catch edit distance in a way that doesn't dramatically impact time or space or both. But I'm not aware of how pervasive that pattern is or how commonly it's used within, let's say, an online attack window. So I would wait until that pattern is really clearly used in leaked password corpora, because that's when attackers are going to tailor their attack. But it is an important pattern. I can't catch all patterns here either.
Okay, so great. Why don't we thank Daniel again?